Welcome to the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. The mass shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School almost 10 weeks ago has ushered in a new era of activism. A vocal group of students at Stoneman Douglas have led school walkouts, marches, and social media campaigns protesting gun violence. They have inspired student groups across the country to do the same. The tragedy also led to actions by American businesses not seen after past school mass shootings. Several businesses, like car rental company Hertz and airline Delta, cut ties with the National Rifle Association. Bank of America won't lend money to gun manufacturers making assault-style weapons. Dick's Sporting Goods stopped selling assault weapons, and grocery store Kroger has removed, quote, assault rifle-themed periodicals from its checkout lines. The Stoneman Douglas shooting changed Florida law, and it changed how some businesses engage on what can be controversial public policy issues. It isn't limited to the gun debate. As President Trump has made immigration a central issue of his administration, companies from the technology, retail, and financial industries have been outspoken in their support of DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals immigration policy allowing people who came to the U.S. as undocumented children to register and stay. Trump's efforts to cancel the policy have been put on hold by federal court rulings. Now, we spoke about these two contentious issues and their intersection with business with a trio of South Florida business leaders.
I am Keith Koenig, and I am president of City Furniture.
I am Victor Mendelson, and I am co-president of Heiko Corporation.
I'm Villarino, one of the owners of Las Vegas Cuban Cuisine.
Villarino was with President Trump last week during his stop in Hialeah to talk about businesses and lower taxes.
Good morning, Mr. President. Thank you for allowing me to be here with you today. It is a great honor.
Thank you.
My name is Irina Villarino.
Now, before we spoke about the specific issue of guns and immigration, we talked with these three about how politics intersect with their businesses in South Florida and elsewhere.
Politics plays into our daily lives. So if people feel confidence, if people feel that the economy is on the up and up, they're more readily willing to go out and spend. So politics is in our daily lives.
So what are you feeling then? What are you experiencing in the restaurant industry that gives you optimism about the overall economy, given, you know, the state of political discourse in this country and the unharmonious nature of a lot of that discourse?
I actually think that it's getting better. I think that it was a lot worse about 8 years ago, where we couldn't have any dissension. We couldn't have any disagreements because you would be labeled some type of derogatory name. I think now we feel a little bit more willing to come out and speak and support if you would like or not, but you're not being labeled racist or bigot or what have you as much as you were even a year and a half ago.
We have heard some of those accusations be leveled against the president, though, and his supporters with some of his comments, racism and bigotry.
And I think it's unfortunate because when you start labeling people, decent people start staying quiet. And we have to have conversations in order to make progress. We have to talk about our differences in order to know where we're at and where we want to head as a nation. And so you can't, just because we have a difference of opinion, I don't think that we should label one another derogatory names, because that the conversation, a healthy conversation, ends.
Keith, are you hearing more politics come into the business environment, more overt politics, more overt willingness on the part of executives like yourselves to talk about politics and engage?
I think people are reticent to take extreme stands either way, but I think business leaders take pro-business, pro-economic growth, pro-USA stances consistently. When we try to tie down somebody to extreme choices, I think most business leaders tend to move towards the middle and shy away from trying to alienate anybody, because that's not in our best interest. But I think most business leaders try to advance pro-business, pro-quality of life, pro-economy, pro-long-term prosperity for the entire American public.
With the political discourse and the tenor of the political discourse out there, what about what your business is telling you about the economy?
The economy is robust, and there are strong fundamentals underneath. We have population growth. Many of our many major countries around the world do not have population growth. We have a very skilled workforce, knowing that there are skill gaps within that. We have a very robust economy from a standpoint of job growth. So if you want to be working, you can get a job. Housing is challenging, but it's increasing in supply because the demand is there. There's just all fundamental underlying things. And the cost of capital is affordable for most businesses.
To be able to borrow money is pretty cheap.
What we don't know is what normally gets us, but right now everything looks pretty good.
Victor, you know that very well in your business, operating internationally in high tech and avionics and defense contracting. But I want to, what does your business environment tell you about the overall economy, and also this idea of political discourse? Is it as disharmonious as it sounds a lot of times?
Well, the economy is strong. I think right now we're seeing it pretty much across the board. Both in commercial, in our space markets, defense, as well as electronics and other technology markets. And we're seeing the strength that all of us here are talking about right now. In terms of political discourse, in our field, we don't find it acrimonious. I mean, we do find that people are less afraid today than they were to express their opinions in the past few years. And I think there was this notion of political correctness that maybe is peeling back a little bit. But people, are, of course, careful, and we should be careful. We should be respectful. We don't want to alienate customers, suppliers, others. Frankly, the workplace isn't for political discourse as a rule of thumb. I mean, we want to get work done. We want to engage in commerce, and political discourse is great at lunch, dinner, and in social settings, but when we're in the workplace, we're there to conduct business.
You're not doing it on the factory shop floor at a HEICO facility, but Arena, they may be doing it at lunch hour in one of your restaurants.
Well, coincidentally, today I had customers that came in, and some are very happy that I was there with the president, and others weren't, and that's fine. I said, you know, this is why we live in America. We can agree to disagree, and it's okay. So I had a lady, she goes, well, you know, how was he? And I said, well, he was very nice. He was a gentleman. Towards me, I, you know, have nothing but nice things to say. I may be a little biased, but I actually enjoyed my meeting with the president. And she says, well, it was only convenient to him. I said, listen, the truth is, and this is like a 2-minute exchange with the customer. I said, the truth is, there's nothing I could say to persuade you to like him. People that like him will like him, and those that don't won't. And she goes, you're absolutely right. I said, yeah, we can agree to disagree, and it's quite all right. So in the restaurant, you get it more. I tend to be a little bit opinionated and vocal about my opinions because I came from a country where we were not given that right. It was taken away from us, and family members were completely divided and would stop speaking to each other. You know, many times some would stay in Cuba, others would come here. And so, and it's very lamentable that we can't, you know, stay even within the same relation, you know, boundaries of a family and have difference of opinion. It should never reach those extremes.
The vitriol isn't there in the workplace. I don't find it in a business context. Now, we happen to be in an industry which is probably 90% or better aligned with the current administration and the party in power. Not necessarily aligned with how the president delivers his message or what he says, but with what he does.
And with the policies.
So aligned with the policies, but not necessarily with the bombast, let's say, at all times. And so what we tend to see is more agreement and, let's say, vigorous agreement. But we'll find, I do find, that when we get outside of the business setting and the big business context, and we get into the social or sometimes the family settings, we'll hear the words like, you know, you're an idiot for having voted for him, or you're, you know, he's an idiot, he's a moron, and it just, that doesn't help.
That's Victor Mendelson. He's co-president of HEICO, a publicly traded aerospace and electronics company based here in South Florida. Keith Koenig, president of City Furniture, and Arena Villarino of Las Vegas Cuban Cuisine round out our roundtable of South Florida business leaders talking about business and politics. Still to come as our conversation continues, how these three business leaders hear President Trump as a businessman on polarizing issues, not as a politician.
It's consistent in the business world for major issues to be negotiated from polar extremes. And that sounds, in the political arena, outrageous.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. Today, we're featuring our conversation with three South Florida business leaders. One, Arena Villarino, is co-owner of the Las Vegas Cuban cuisine chain of restaurants. Keith Koenig co-founded and still runs City Furniture. And Victor Mendelson is co-president of HEICO, a multinational company that makes airplane parts and technology for the military and space industries. All three are successful business people who employ hundreds of South Florida workers. They are used to business negotiations, and that's what they hear from President Trump on contentious issues ranging from immigration to North Korea. We pick up our conversation about business and politics with Keith Koenig of City Furniture.
Let's understand that our president is the business person, and he's used to negotiating. And if he's going to buy a building that he's willing to pay $100 million for, he might start at 50. And some of his outrageous considerations for other, what others think are crazy, actually are negotiations. So I think a lot of what he does is setting up for an outcome that he's willing to get to that is far different from where he starts.
So let me ask you, because all of you are successful, deeply experienced business people, have you ever run across the same type of negotiating tactic that we see the president
Absolutely.
Using?
All the time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's consistent in the business world for major issues to be negotiated from polar extremes. And that sounds, in the political arena, outrageous. But the reality is, the president is a very skilled negotiator, and he's going to find a place to get to a logical outcome. Most of the time, negotiations are never predictable, but I think that's a point of view that most people don't understand that are not in the business world as much.
So let me ask you, because all of you are successful, deeply experienced business people, have you ever run across the same type of negotiating tactic that we see the president
Absolutely.
Using?
All the time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's consistent in the business world for major issues to be negotiated from polar extremes. And that sounds, in the political arena, outrageous. But the reality is, the president is a very skilled negotiator, and he's going to find a place to get to a logical outcome. Most of the time, negotiations are never predictable, but I think that's a point of view that most people don't understand that are not in the business world as much.
Arena, you've been successful, your family's been successful in growing your restaurant business here in South Florida. So you were nodding vigorously in agreement that you've encountered this kind of negotiating tactic frequently.
Well, we do real estate as well. So even in real estate, I mean, when you purchase a property or where you're negotiating a lease or what have you, you tend to be in the same situation. You start, you know, they want a lot, you want to give very little, and how do you reach a middle ground? So there's, you know, you give a little bit, they give in a little bit, but it takes time. And sometimes a negotiation may take a year. And so in that year, you're kind of like dancing and you're trying to get together and see how you guys are going to work this out. This takes time.
I guess the difference here, Victor, is, you know, $100 million building or a restaurant real estate deal, you don't have national security at stake. You're in the national security business to some degree with your satellite and defense industry. Is that a distinction that does need to be made here or not so much?
Well, you raise a valid issue, but when I look at what's happened over successive administrations of both parties, both Republican and both Democrat, the conventional way really hasn't gotten us too far. Take China, for example. China has, I don't think anyone disagrees in this country, or very few people do disagree, for a quarter of a century abused us in trade overall. And I have concrete examples of it time and time again in intellectual property and in other ways.
You bet.
We responded with the same platitudes and the same diplomatic gestures, and finally, it's a departure. And we've all heard the saying that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing repeatedly and expecting different results. So maybe this departure is what we need. Maybe we need a radical departure from the way we've done it, and Trump is doing that, and we'll see the results. And it does entail risk. And, you know, as a business person, as business people in this room, we all take risk. And politicians are loath to take risk. They want to take the lowest risk because they want to ensure that their place in history, number one, is secure, and number two, probably before number one, that they're reelected.
Mm-hmm. Victor Mendelson helps run the aerospace and electronics maker HEICO. He's one of three South Florida bosses we spoke to about business and politics. Keith Koenig runs City Furniture, and Irina Villarino helps run her family's restaurant chain, Las Vegas Cuban Cuisine. Still to come, guns, politics, and business after the Stoneman Douglas mass school shooting.
At some state, business leaders have a responsibility. If you've got a forum, if you feel strongly about something, there's a risk associated with that, yeah, because I might alienate somebody. But the reality is, they have a right to their point of view, mm-hmm, but I do as well.
This is the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening and supporting WLRN. For Keith Koenig, the Stoneman Douglas shooting has not changed his opinion about guns, but it has moved guns higher up on his list of issues. Koenig is the president of City Furniture, based in Broward County. He's also a member of the Stoneman Douglas Victims Fund Committee. He heads up the fundraising. The mass shooting has led several companies to change how they interact with guns. Bank of America has stopped lending more to assault weapons makers. Walmart decided it won't sell guns or ammunition to anyone under the age of 21 years old. Several companies ended their discount programs with the National Rifle Association, and some were criticized for taking that action. Businesses did not take these kinds of steps after past mass school shootings. We spoke about the business community reactions, both for and against gun restrictions, and the role corporations are playing in these types of debates with three South Florida bosses. Irina Villarino is the co-owner of the restaurant chain Las Vegas Cuban Cuisine, along with her family. Victor Mendelson is with HEICO, a publicly traded aviation and defense parts maker, and Keith Koenig is with City Furniture.
I've had the opportunity to meet with all of the victims, the deceased parents, and many of the injured, and countless other students that have suffered. So it's hit home, I think, is the message that we have. I don't see any logic in assault weapons. I fully support the Second Amendment, and I have tons of friends that have firearms, and I don't.
Do you think you would have said that prior to February 14th?
I would have, yeah. I would have, because I didn't change my opinion. I hadn't changed my opinion, but I think it's more topical right now. So I'm personally against that, and we have come out to support that. Those kind of restrictions and move in the direction where I don't think those have places in the public arena right now.
Because of your role as a business leader that has put you in that position of working with the Victims Fund and the philanthropy involved with the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas families and community, how have you thought about speaking publicly about these types of issues in regards to firearms as seen as a business leader in South Florida that you are?
I'm not afraid to talk about that, even at the risk of alienating somebody, because it is a strong opinion. I do have a strong opinion. I think I'm speaking for the big majority of people. So I think at some state, business leaders have a responsibility. If you've got a forum, if you feel strongly about something, there's a risk associated with that, yeah, because I might alienate somebody. But the reality is, they have a right to their point of view, mm-hmm, but I do as well, sure, and mine is that they should be, that the automatic weapons and the bump stocks and all that stuff should be eliminated.
And I guess my question is, because of, you know, what you do for a living, you are both the operational and figurehead of a pretty major retail company with hundreds of employees here in South Florida. Does any of that come into your calculation when you're tackling this kind of third rail, which historically has been a third rail for business leaders, that they wouldn't want to engage in a Second Amendment debate, in a gun ownership debate?
If this was a one-off and that was the first one and the last one that happened in 50 years, it probably wouldn't get the attention. But now we're seeing repeated issues where this is a big problem, and I think it's time for the entire country to galvanize. And you're seeing it in the march that the kids did, which, yep, was magnificent.
Victor, let me ask you, you have a unique perspective amongst this group as a co-leader of a publicly traded company and one that operates in the defense industry, certainly. How do you hear other publicly traded companies come out and take the kinds of stances that we've seen Dick's Sporting Goods take, we've seen Walmart take, Bank of America, Citigroup take, in regards to how they have decided to change their relationship specifically with gun retailing or gun manufacturers after this Parkland tragedy and after the outspoken students?
You know, I'll be honest, I'm not certain as to why all of them have taken the positions they've taken, whether they've done it because they believe in it, which I believe, for example, Keith does and is sincere, and some of these may be doing it in response to political pressure and headline risk, and they may be getting pressure from institutional shareholders, the BlackRocks of the world, and those kinds of organizations.
BlackRock's a monster, multi-trillion dollar asset manager. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. That has been also very public about reviewing the relationships that it has with publicly traded gun manufacturers.
Precisely. So I'm not quite sure what the relationships are and where they're coming, as you will, from the heart or where they're coming from a more business and survival instinct.
And kind of regardless of what the rationale is, the fact is it has happened. Has that struck you as someone who operates at that level within corporate America, that you have seen this happen after this tragedy?
No, it doesn't surprise me at this point. I think we've seen corporate America react in the past to different events, mm-hmm. and I think we'll continue to see them adjust their strategies. I believe there was a sea change that occurred with the last recession. Something happened in the 2008 recession where business was knocked off of, if you will, its pedestal. And I think it happened as well with the administration that followed. And there was sort of a view...
The Obama administration.
Yeah, with the Obama administration, that there was sort of a view that business was no longer conducting a good operation, right? It was no longer in wearing the white hat. Mm-hmm. And it was really just sort of up to business for itself. Hmm. And I think a lot of companies are still reacting to that and trying to find their balance. Maybe that's not all bad. I mean, maybe that's not all bad that businesses are reacting that way. But at the same time, I think in the long term, there are a lot of factors that have to be balanced here. You know, I will say I don't see the benefit of companies of people running around with automatic weapons in the streets, and I think that tends to resonate more with the American public. So I'm not sure that it'll spill over into every single issue. This one involves life and death.
As assault weapons, as you understand them and define them, is that a ban on those types of weapons? Is that something that you would support, Victor?
I think you have to define what that ban would be and how it would apply. But generally speaking, I'm not a fan of assault weapons all around the country. And so I'm just not a fan of assault weapons.
Arena, how do you hear this when you're hearing companies of all different kinds of sizes engage in this debate over guns, which had been such a third rail of public policy and a third rail of polarizing issues for a good long time, and still is, frankly, but companies becoming more vocal about describing how they want to, or in some cases don't no longer want to engage or work within a business that touches firearms?
Well, I'm a little apprehensive about that because how far are we going to allow our corporate culture to indicate what is correct or incorrect in our society? What role do parents have? And I ask Keith, you know, firearms have existed probably before I was born. What has changed in society? What are we doing that is causing kids to go out and commit these heinous crimes? they've always existed, or they've existed for 50 years. I don't know even how long, because I never had a firearm until we had so many terrible incidents where I felt that I personally needed to protect myself and my child. And so I remember my daughter was born. She goes, "Oh, mommy, we never have a gun at home." And a year later, I said, "Well, honey, unfortunately, mommy has to have a gun now," because I really felt, somewhat suspicious going to a large shopping center, a movie theater, and not being able to protect my child. So where are we failing as a society that it's causing these amounts of crimes to take place? So I wonder, as a society, where are we failing? Why is this taking place? And I think that we can take away the firearms, and then we're going to have cars, and then we're going to have knives. So where do we draw the line? I am not a...
We've already drawn the line. I mean, we can't have bazookas and nuclear weapons. So right. There's already plenty of lines out there already. Well, and there's not much of a slippery slope.
You could
draw the line if you wanted to. I want to bring you back, though, to this idea of the business role in this. And I hear what you're saying, certainly on the personal responsibility. But this incident... we've seen companies become more vocal. We've heard companies become more vocal in relation to how they engage with the gun industry specifically. You've seen a company like BlackRock, a big investment manager that owns trillions of dollars of stocks, essentially say it's going to review its portfolio and make a decision about whether or not it even wants publicly traded gun stocks within the portfolios that it manages for millions and millions of Americans. We hadn't seen that kind of activity after Columbine. We didn't see that kind of activity after Virginia Tech. We didn't see it after Sandy Hook. We've seen it here. So I'm just wondering, how you hear these corporations when they are engaging in the gun debate and taking the debate to a point of changing business practices and how they engage with the gun industry.
They're entitled to take these actions. I mean, they need to, as Keith said, I mean, they have to align their values with their corporate values and see, if this is something that is honestly true and dear to their heart and they feel they're doing the right thing, so be it. But I don't think, I personally do not like corporations to tell me what is correct or incorrect. And I think as a society, we need to be cautious of that, because the corporate world has an immense amount of power over our daily lives and over our culture, companies such as Nike's, with our youth, et cetera, that could influence our kids to think a certain way without knowing the repercussions of their actions. And so I defend our Second Amendment. I think that it's vitally and crucially important for us to protect it. But as society changes, I think we do have to make certain modifications. But I would caution the public not to rely on corporations as they would a celebrity to pass down the values for our society.
I think Irina pointed out something that's very important, and that is corporations should not dictate our lives to us and our own morality. When I think of examples where corporations do that, corporations are acting in their economic interest. Mm-hmm. And think of the corporations in Hollywood and some of the examples that they sell to the public, the gratuitous sex, the drugs, the violence, mm-hmm. the video games.
Yep.
And think about the tobacco industry that for decades were selling that. Now you've got the marijuana industry, and it's going to be selling that.
Some would argue the pharmaceutical industry with opioids.
It's pharmaceutical industry with opioids, and they're out there aggressively selling it and glorifying that and glorifying these, perhaps these lifestyles. And you could even apply it to the gun manufacturers and some of those ads. And so if we do let them dictate our lifestyles, we will be in trouble. We ultimately have to make the decisions, and those decisions have to be made in the homes and in the families. Now, having said that, I think responsible corporations can do things sensibly to protect their people and their employees, and they can say, well, I want to do something to benefit our people and our staff and do things locally, as Keith is doing.
Yeah, I want to give Keith the last word on this particular gun issue, but Irina, to that last point that Victor just made, would you ever consider, for instance, in your restaurants, putting up a no gun zone, no concealed weapons on our property?
I mean, how could I enforce that realistically, even if I do it? I mean, how can I enforce that? I would have to have metal detectors for each and every person to come in.
I think the Parkland, the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas shooting certainly touched another nerve in our country, and I'm hoping it advances the discourse in a positive direction.
Keith Koenig with City Furniture. He's a member of the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas Victims Fund. He was joined by Arena Villarino of the Las Vegas Cuban cuisine restaurant chain and Victor Mendelson with aerospace and electronics parts maker Heiko. Still to come, we continue our conversation with the trio, business politics, and the combative issue of immigration.
Generalizing an entire group of people under one umbrella, I don't think is the savviest of things to do. But I think that there's an element in the nation that is somewhat worried that we're really changing the tone of the nation by allowing so many people to come in an unregulated fashion.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening to WLRN. There may be no issue that has divided President Trump and his supporters in the business community quite like immigration. Among the many immigration policy changes attempted by the administration, the president rescinded the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals policy in September, but subsequent court challenges have put that on hold. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the lobbying voice of American business, called for the administration to continue allowing hundreds of thousands of immigrants, DACA recipients, and people here under temporary protection status to stay and continue working. Immigration is an economic issue for businesses here in South Florida and one in which companies have increasingly used their voices. It's where we pick up our conversation now about business and politics with Arena Villarino of the Las Vegas Cuban cuisine restaurant chain, Victor Mendelson, co-president at aerospace parts company Heiko, and Keith Koenig, the boss at City Furniture.
I'm willing to take risks on that, on stuff like immigration. I'm very pro-immigration. I make my opinion known. We are going to need more immigration to be able to meet the needs of our economy over the next number of years. That's almost a given.
Now, why immigration? Is that because it is, for City Furniture, an economic issue? The population growth is something that the company has to count on.
Well, I think it's in the best interest of our entire state, country, community. I don't think I'm not for wide open borders or anything. I want to have a good rule of law and have good process. But the general orientation that I will take a stand on and I think is popular within our team and reflected with most of our team is a positive. We have the most mixed organization that I could imagine. When I did some of the math, we were about a third Anglo, about a third Hispanic, and about a third African American. But immigration is, from my point of view, a very necessary thing. And there, it is controversial because some people might disagree with my point of view, and I understand that. I'm not trying to say anything other than be forward thinking on that.
Arena, immigration is a personal issue, certainly for you. It is your family's story here in the United States with the Mariel Boatlift and building a business in the 80s and 90s and in this century. How do you think through the immigration issue as it relates to the economy?
As Keith said, it's a very important issue because in order to continue having growth, we're going to need good immigration to continue flowing in. But we need to be very conscious of the type of immigration we're going to continue allow moving forward. The world has changed dramatically, and I think our consciousness has to change along with it. We can't be naive to the different influences that are that we're facing at this moment. I do believe, as our president said, we need to vet prospective immigrants and make sure that they are freedom-loving and willing to adapt to our way of life here. Not everybody comes with that forward thinking mentality. A lot of people come and they want to stay stuck with their original or native country's way of doing things. And I think that that's something that we need to study moving forward. But definitely we need to embrace immigration and we need to welcome good people that are willing to come here with the same dreams that we came.
So it sounds like you'd like some kind of immigration test or some kind of litmus test for immigrants.
Well, certainly, because when there's a difference when you want to come to the U.S. and take advantage of the economical stability and not necessarily want to adapt to the cultural aspect of the country. And I think in order for us to continue being a solid nation, one nation, we need to have a culture that applies to all of its citizens and not have fragments of different cultures within the country.
Did you support the end of the wet foot, dry foot policy for Cuba?
I do. I do support it because I think there's, as sad as it may be, and my heart pours out for my Cuban compatriots, but I think there's a difference between the many, the previous influx of Cuban immigrants, where many of us, or most of us, came to this country because we wanted, like I said, with the president, we wanted political stability, rule of law, and freedom. I think a lot of, unfortunately, I think they have something of the Stockholm syndrome, where they're kind of enamored, if you will, with the Castro revolution still, and don't see its fault, and yet want to come here and take advantage of the economical possibilities.
Victor, how about immigration in HICO, in your capacity as a leader of this company?
Immigration is very important to us as well. Like Keith and Irina, we believe in a sensible immigration policy, not just wide open borders. We believe in vetting those who come to this country and ensuring our security around our borders and within the country itself. And at the same time, immigrants have been crucial to our industry. We need immigrants to build our economy, one, for economic growth, for GDP growth. They're important. Number two, they're important for labor pool. Mm-hmm. And number three, again, in our industry, for intellectual capital alone. We have examples. I mean, you look at Elon Musk today and SpaceX as an example.
Yeah, the founder of Tesla and SpaceX, the for-profit space exploration company.
Exactly. Another
from
great
South
example.
Africa, I believe, is where Elon's from.
Exactly, yeah. From South Africa.
Is SpaceX a customer of HICO's?
SpaceX is a customer of some of our companies, as an example. There are countless other examples, and I meet them every day in our industry, people who come from all around the world, those who fled the Iranian Revolution and so on. So we need the immigration. We need these people to add to our economy.
The data is inarguable in terms of the overwhelming positive impact that immigration has had on the U.S. economy. So with that in mind, and all three of you have talked about, you know, the importance of immigration, the tenor of the immigration debate is extremely loud, no doubt about it, very divisive, pitting one group against another group in some cases. Do you feel that the business community is playing a role in this debate that seems to be a debate over extremes?
I don't think the business community shares that extreme point of view. And I believe some of that was Americans thinking they're losing jobs to immigrants that are not coming through legally. Now, that's a legitimate gripe, if that's in fact. The reality is over the last number of years, our economy has grown so much that pretty much anybody who wants to work that has even no skills, if they can show up on time, they can get a job. And they can actually get a pretty good job. Mm-hmm. I mean, not the end of the world. We've got lots of economic opportunity. So I think that polarized point of view is going to be diminished as the economic opportunities are more the challenge of, we don't have enough. We have more job openings at City Furniture right now than we've ever had. We have more unfilled positions at every level, all the way up to extremely high technical professional software engineers. So I think that will be lessened.
We're finding it throughout our organization. And it's difficult, in fact, to find talented, experienced people who have come up through the organizations and through other organizations. And it's becoming increasingly challenging. And frankly, I think we made a mistake. Our country has made a mistake restricting recently, in the last year, restricting some of the work visas that we're issuing. I think we should be going in the opposite direction.
The high-skilled work visas. Yes.
The high-skilled work visas. It, particularly given the increase in our population. So we should at least scale it somehow in percentage terms to our overall population.
Yeah. Irina, you agree with that?
We have a shortage as well. It's unbelievable. And I think they're kind of changing the industry. That's why you see so many of these quick service places where you have two or three people behind the counter and you go with a number type of thing, because it's just, it's very difficult to get help to serve in the dining rooms these days.
So balance that against the idea of immigration reform, however that may look like in a perfect world. We've been loudly debating this in this country for a good number of years. But lately, that volume has increased because of some of the actions that the president and the administration have taken.
You know, I support our president, but he's not God. You know, he's a president and he's a man, and he has faults as any other human being has. And I think, like Victor said originally, you know, sometimes his bombastic style kind of gets in the way of things a little bit for him. And for those of us, quite frankly, that support him, you know, generalizing an entire group of people under one umbrella, I don't think is the savviest of things to do. But again, I think he was appealing to a certain element of the country that is worried of the demographical change that's occurring in the nation. I mean, we were seen once as a melting pot, and Some people say that we're a salad bowl now, or I don't know what we are in the food chain. But I think that there's an element in the nation that is somewhat worried that we're really changing the tone of the nation by allowing so many people to come in an unregulated fashion.
Irina Villarino helps run the Las Vegas Cuban cuisine restaurant chain with her family. She was joined by Keith Koenig of City Furniture and Victor Mendelson, co-president of HICO, talking business and politics. And still to come, the role these three company bosses think business owners play in debating the public issues.
If business leaders set the right example and they set the right tone, then success follows on so many levels.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy, Business and Politics. I'm Tom Hudson. It's impossible to separate money and the economy from politics. There are the contributions from the business community to politicians and the soft money donations to political action committees. And then there's the election campaign adage, it's the economy, stupid. Business leaders may not be elected, but they play a role in politics and policy. We've seen that most recently in the tax bill debate and in the gun issue after the Stoneman Douglas tragedy, with companies limiting or cutting ties with gun makers and otherwise speaking out on the issue. How business leaders think of their role in these potentially divisive debates is where we picked up our conversation with three South Florida business leaders, Keith Koenig of City Furniture, Victor Mendelson of HICO, and Irina Villarino of the Las Vegas Cuban cuisine restaurant chain.
Well, I think a lot of people look up to business leaders. I mean, just like they look up to teachers or they look up to religious leaders in our community. I think that we all have a responsibility to our stockholders. And so they look up to us to see how we conduct our business and how we conduct our lives. And a lot of times we're a reflection of what they would like to achieve in their lives. I think that's why we're looking towards leaders and a president that is looking to take risk on our behalf in order to ensure our American dream.
Keith, how about it? What role do business leaders and their businesses play in political discourse?
I agree with Irina. It's got to be, we have to be a good example in everything that we do. I look at my, within my business and within my realm of friends and community that I've worked a lifetime to build trust and respect and try to be a good example so that those folks can learn. And I've learned from people who have gone before me. And that trust can be obliterated in a nanosecond.
Victor, how about it from your perspective?
Jobs are more than just an economic driver in a house, in a household. You know, it's more than just bringing home the bacon, as they say, and providing income. It's about dignity and self-respect. And so if businesses bring that home, they're bringing home an entire lifestyle. They're bringing home a mindset that pervades everything that we do. So if business leaders set the right example and they set the right tone, then success follows on so many levels.
If you don't have dignity, if you don't have honor, if you don't have principles, well, it doesn't really matter how much money you have. I mean, it all depends. That's the biggest measuring yardstick you can have for a great life and success.
How do you think about engaging with some of these more polarizing issues? I mean, you've been very outspoken with your support of President Trump, even during the campaign on your social media accounts. Obviously, you appeared with him in Hialeah.
Well, I don't push my politics onto anyone, no more than I like anybody else to push theirs onto me. And so even at work, I don't talk to my employees unless they engage with me. They know clearly where I stand. I had a Trump victory party at one of our restaurants with friends and family. And most of them don't agree because they don't understand. because they don't dig a little deeper to find out the reality of the situation. And so yesterday, a few days ago, I go to the hair salon and I said, you know, I need to get my hair done. I have an interview. And she goes, well, and this is a staunch anti-Trump lady. And she goes, well, if you're going to talk to somebody who's going to help our economy, I'll put you in first. You know, I'll pass you through first. And I said, yeah. So I was like, okay, I'm happy to get out of here. But
did you tell her who you were going to talk to?
Sure. She had already seen me on TV with the president. Anything to get out of the hair salon faster. But
have you experienced any conflict in your business life with any political position that you've taken personally?
No, I can't say that I have. More socially, but not in business. Because I think, as Keith and Victor said, most business leaders want what's best for the country economically, because when there's economical stability, there's political stability and prosperity.
And I guess a place to explore, though, is those issues that are not economic in nature, that aren't tax policy, aren't business regulations, hiring, those kinds of things. And we've seen a lot of that recently, but we've also seen corporate thinking kind of evolve about how to engage like that. I mean, at HEICO, a multi-billion dollar multinational company, lots of different stakeholders, you're operating in a lot of different jurisdictions, Victor. How do you think through those non-economic policy issues that potentially could affect those stakeholders?
Well, each one of those are important, and we have a rule of thumb. We have a saying that my father taught me when I was young, which is, when in doubt, do the right thing. And so that really is a guiding principle. I know it sounds kind of funny, hokey, and a little circular, in fact. We really don't give a lot of consideration to the political or the public view. And maybe it's because we don't have a consumer side to what we do. Yeah. You try to develop good relations and do the right thing for your suppliers, for your customers, for your team members, and do that day in and day out. And generally, that yields the right result. And it may be unpopular at a given point in time, and that's fine.
Education is not directly economic, and we're going to be very supportive of that. Social good is not necessarily economic, but we're going to be examples of trying to do the right thing there. So I think that's the kind of leadership that we will try to take and be visible to our entire team, our families, and within the community.
Our South Florida CEO trio talking about business and politics this hour featured Keith Koenig with City Furniture, Victor Mendelson with HEICO, and Irina Villarino with the Las Vegas Cuban Cuisine Restaurants. You can follow us on Twitter, at WLRN is our handle, or look for a podcast of this program by searching Sunshine Economy on iTunes. Pilar Ribe is our technical director. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening.